Welcome to Library Voices SC. This is Curtis Rogers. I'm the Communications Director here at the South Carolina State Library. And in this podcast episode, we have a call-in guest, Cynthia Hall. She also goes by Cindy with the Lowcountry Hall of Science and Math, which is affiliated with the College of Charleston down in Charleston, South Carolina. So great to have you with us, Cindy.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, what is the Lowcountry Hall of Science and Math, and what do you do there?
I am the director of the Lowcountry Hall of Science and Math, and basically the way that I like to put it is that we are the education outreach arm for the School of Science and Math at the College of Charleston. So basically what that means is that I work with faculty and staff in all of the science and math disciplines that we have here and help them get their outreach or their research out into the general public so people are aware of what our scientists and mathematicians are doing and that they can partake in some of that exciting research themselves.
Oh, well, that's an amazing resource. How did it all get started? Do you know?
Yes, I've been here for about 4 years, but we've been around for a while, and we started out as being a resource center for educators in the Lowcountry area. I still have a resource center where teachers can come in and check out materials related to science and math and can use those in their classroom, and then they bring them back in. So the idea was to really get some innovative materials out into the classroom environment. About 2 years ago, we changed the role a little bit to make sure we were focused on what the College of Charleston is doing and to make sure we were getting our research out into the public so others knew what we were doing.
Wow, that's a pretty intense mission. And the one thing I looked at on your website is that you deal with all kinds of schools, even private schools.
I do. I work with the local school districts around here in, you know, the surrounding Charleston area. I also work with the private schools in the area, and I also work with some of the homeschool organizations to ensure that they're doing and getting the best resources that they can to do science and math.
That's wonderful. It's really great to see that folks like you and, you know, being affiliated with a major college or university are able to, you know, get the word out about things like this. That's really important to, I guess, STEM and STEAM.
Right. You know, I think a lot of the students, especially those that I interact with, I'm a geologist by training, and using geology as an example, many students just think that we study rocks and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And there is so much cool research being done in geology, and all of the other disciplines are like that too. And so I think a lot of students learn what they learn in the classroom and don't realize sometimes the innovative things that are going on in that particular discipline. And so that's kind of where my role is. And it's really exciting. It keeps me on my toes because even though I'm a geologist, I have to talk with the physicist, I have to talk with the chemist, the biologist, the mathematicians, and try to pull all that together in my own mind. So it's a very exciting and rewarding career, if you will, position.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. I don't know if I mentioned this to you when we saw each other in person, but my undergraduate degree is in geography.
Oh, I did not know. My master's degree is in geography.
Oh, very cool. So we have a lot more in common.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, one of the things that I really wanted to talk with you about today is the training session that you had with us here in Columbia at the South Carolina State Library, and this was just last week. What date was that on? I've already forgotten. Do you remember?
I am looking back at my calendar. I know it seems like time flies, right?
It does.
What was that? On Wednesday, July 26th.
So it was last month.
Yeah, last month.
Because we're already into August.
It was just last week, though.
That's right. But that training session was so wonderful, and I'll just give a quick background. It was a training session on the upcoming major event that we're going to be having through Columbia, which is in the path of totality for the 2017 total solar eclipse. But it was geared towards people with visual impairments. Can you talk a little bit about that training session?
Sure thing. I'll give a little bit of background first, if that's okay. to how we were able to do some of these trainings. The South Carolina NASA Space Grant Consortium is also housed here at the College of Charleston, and my colleague Dr. Cassandra Runyon is the director of that program. And she and I have worked for years at making different NASA materials accessible. She kind of was a big proponent of this among NASA many moons ago, and I got involved with her doing that, and it both kind of became a passion of ours. Through the South Carolina Space Grant, NASA funded us to do some educator professional development on the eclipse. And so we started doing that for K through 12 educators. Then we brought in some informal educators, so those from museums, science centers, and the like, and also park rangers. And then when I talked with you all at the State Library, we were like, let's do something a little bit different, not just a solely content-focused workshop. And so the other aspect of the funding that we have received from NASA was to develop books that would allow those that have visual impairments to experience a variety of things that are coming out of the NASA missions, the eclipse being one of those. So we created this Getting a Feel for Eclipses, which is a tactile graphics book. And when I told the South Carolina State Library that, you all were like, let's focus on that because that's exciting. And it's an audience that we hadn't reached as well as we should have or could have. And so that's kind of how the workshop began. And it was a very exciting experience to be there last week and to work with teachers of students with visual impairments, but then we also had some individuals that were blind there. So it was a very rewarding and exciting experience for both Dr. Runyon and myself.
It really was, and I was able to sit in on a few parts of it. And you had the folks, the attendees, do a lot of hands-on components. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things that you, you know, actually worked with them with the different tactile devices? And also, I remember you guys got up and walked far away across the library to understand distance.
That's exactly right. So we also had with us at this workshop a student of ours here at the College of Charleston. Her name is Mariah Williams, and she is visually impaired. And so we have been working with her to take a lot of the activities that are already at NASA and tend to be hands-on. You know, we know that that's a good learning experience for everyone, and so most of NASA's activities are already fairly hands-on. But we worked with Mariah to, and Cass and I brainstormed ideas and ways that we could make and take these materials and make them accessible to those with visual impairments. And so a lot of the activities that we did last week at the workshop were adapted slightly from what NASA already has on their website. One of those, for example, is the 100-yard solar system, which we tried to do within your library, mm-hmm. where we walked out as many planets as we could so that you get a sense of scale. If the sun were a nickel, the size of a nickel, what that distance would look like between the planets. Taking that and then yelling out or maybe just talking loudly or saying loudly the name of the planet helps those with visual impairments be able to assess the distance between, you know, so if someone's standing right beside you and says Mercury and Venus, you kind of get the sense that you're right next to each other. But then when you get out far enough and you're out at Uranus and someone's having to yell so that the person at Mercury can actually hear them, there's that sense of distance that you can get without actually being able to visually see that, if you will.
Right, and it's amazing to, you know, when you start to think about what would someone with a visual impairment experience during the eclipse, a lot of folks with a visual impairment or blindness can really sense the difference between light and dark.
Exactly. You know, Mariah is considered blind, but she still can see changes in light, and a lot of folks with visual impairments can do that, and so they will sense that it is getting dark. And then in addition, we do expect the temperature to change, and that's something that we all can feel. And then also being able to hear the animal behavior, say the crickets might start chirping or birds might start roosting because they're preparing for nighttime activities. And so those are different ways that we all can experience the eclipse.
Yeah, I'm really going to be fascinated to see, you know, what takes place. I've been doing a lot of research on my own, and from what I understand, this is the first time Columbia, South Carolina, will be in the path of totality since 1778, and that just blows my mind.
Yeah, I know. It's exciting. We actually, here in Charleston, you know, experienced in the 70s an eclipse that kind of came up the East Coast, but that was probably a partial for you guys in Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really exciting. This is the first time we've crossed the United States from coast to coast in over 100 years. So really exciting time.
And I think Columbia, Charleston, and Nashville are the three most populated or the highest populated cities on the path.
That's probably correct. And, you know, if you look at some of the statistics, the freeway system, especially for us here in Columbia and Charleston, really, you know, 26, the pass seems to be going right down 26. And then we have 95 that kind of make Columbia and Charleston even more so a kind of a central point.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the South Carolina Emergency Management Division is already sending out information, and there's, of course, all kinds of information out there on the web, and we'll provide links on our podcast page. But aside from physical safety in the car, what about eye safety? What do people need to be aware of? I've been seeing glasses that, you know, it says you have to do something that's ISO certified. What's all that about?
That is correct. There are only three companies in the United States that make these glasasses that are ISO certified, and that means that they meet the appropriate requirements or restrictions for viewing the sun, and nothing else works. So you cannot wear your sunglasses. I've been asked that many times. A lot of people think you can wear welder's glasses, and you can, but they have to be at a specific grade, and I believe that's a grade 14 welder's glass. Beyond that, you really there are different contraptions out there that allow you to view the sun not directly but indirectly. So there are sun spotters, which will project the image of the sun onto a piece of paper. We have, and then NASA also has ways of making pinhole cameras that allow the suns to be projected on a piece of paper so that you can watch the eclipse that way. But definitely, if there are glasses and they are ISO certified, that is the best way, because you definitely want to be looking at that as we move from partial into totality. Once you get into totality, you can take your glasses off. But if there are any doubts about when to do that, my suggestion is to leave them on. It will be quite the experience.
Definitely. And one of the things I learned not too long ago was that there's something in the back of your eyes, I guess certain kind of receptor, that is basically doesn't have any kind of pain sensing. So sometimes you don't really know right then and there if you're actually damaging your eye.
Right, and you know, I've never experienced a total, so I'm very excited about that. But from what I understand, once you start going into or moving towards totality, so once the sun is 90% covered and up, it becomes a little easier to look at the sun, mm-hmm. but you are still getting the same amount of radiation from the sun. So you still can get cataracts and you still can damage your eyes. You know, when we look at the sun now, we tend to turn away because it hurts. But during that time, again, I have heard that it will not hurt as bad and people will want to look at it, and you're still getting the same amount. You're still susceptible to the same amount of damage. So there's only a small window in totality when you can look at it.
Yeah, it's people really have to be careful, and I think a lot of people are, you know, going to be so excited and maybe forget. But one of the things that we've been trying to do here at the State Library is make sure that people are going to be safe with all of the viewing aspects of this amazing event, and that you really don't know that you can damage your site so easily.
I don't know if this is something you would be interested in or if some of the doctors in Columbia have done this, but the medical university down here in Charleston, their ophthalmologists have written some safety tips and have also written an article.
Oh, that's great.
And that is available on their website.
Great.
And I could provide it to you as a link, too, to provide your listeners here if you think that would be of interest. But it is about what the potential damage could be if you did look without the appropriate eyewear.
Certainly, yes. Please feel free to email me that, and we'll have the link up on the podcast page.
Great.
That would be a great resource. Also, I wanted to make sure that people are aware, and we'll include a link to the photos, but we have some photos from the training session that took place here last week in Columbia at the State Library, and those are on our State Library's Flickr account, so we'll be able to share those. I don't know, have you had a chance to look at those pictures yet?
I have not. I'm very excited to go back and look, though.
Well, great. They're there. So, anything else you would like to add about this upcoming event or anything you guys are doing down at the Lowcountry Hall of Science and Math?
I will tell you quickly what I'm going to be doing because I think it's one of the coolest things, and not to make anyone jealous, but it is, it might make you jealous. The South Carolina Space Grant Consortium and the Lowcountry Hall have also been collaborating on high-altitude balloon launches. So every state in the Path of Totality, their Space Grant Consortium, is going to launch a high-altitude balloon. We even have some space grants that are not in the Path of Totality that are coming to Totality to launch these balloons. And they go into a near-space environment, so about 80 to 100,000 feet high, and we will be capturing images and live-streaming that online at NASA's site. And this is super exciting because it's never been done before. It's all student-led. So we have undergraduate students and high school students that are designing these payloads to go on the balloons. And I am going to be out with the Coast Guard. The College of Charleston team is launching about 5 to 10 miles offshore. Oregon is also launching offshore. So again, that video will be live streamed for anyone to watch, and you can begin watching when Totality happens in Oregon and then finish up here in Charleston with our College of Charleston team. So super exciting things going on around the eclipse and really innovative things that we've never done before.
That is.
And so even if it's cloudy, you know, our balloons will be above the clouds, so hopefully we'll see the shadow, you know, crossing the earth. But if not, maybe we'll see the shadow crossing over the clouds. But let's cross our fingers for no clouds.
That's right. We're all crossing our fingers for clear skies.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me today. Again, I've been talking to Cynthia Hall with the Lowcountry Hall of Science and Math. That's a part of the College of Charleston. And we'll have some great resources for you posted to the links on our podcast page. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me. We thoroughly enjoyed doing this workshop and making this eclipse accessible to all so they can experience in this unique and phenomenal event we're about to have. Thank you so much.
Thank you.